From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is the top of the week, which means it is time for strange news. Bodies being found, games being regulated. A shout out perhaps at the end of tonight's show to all the stories we're not going to get to. But first things first, wraps. Stay warm, folks, here amid the winter season in the Northern Hemisphere, but don't stay too warm.
Oh, no, not too warm. Wait, Ben, before we get into the stories, do you want to tell a personal story a little bit? You sent us a video of something that's been in the news that I can't wait to hear the full story about.
Oh geez. Well, Matt, yes, it is true. Contacted you off hours, recently took a domestic flight, sitting in an exit row by a window, because planes are amazing and it's super awesome to look outside of a plane while it's in the air, sat by an exit window and saw that the interior of the window, the plastic shell of it, was detaching slowly from the rest of the plane.
Yeah, it's. I feel like maybe I saw something about that recently happening.
Maybe your plane was used in like a fashion photo shoot or something. I don't know.
It was a Boeing 717 MAX flying domestically.
Yeah.
Alerted the staff, great staff on the plane. And they said, well, you know, it's like the old
joke. They come like that.
Yeah, it's like the old joke about complaining to a waiter about a fly in your soup, and the waiter says, well, don't tell anyone because they'll want one too. but made it safe and sound, and it perhaps goes to a larger conversation we'll have in a future episode about aviation, the nature of regulation, the nature of flying the friendly skies.
Well, I mean, but I think the day you sent it was the day that Alaska Airlines flight had literally a hidden door inside the fuselage pop off mid-flight.
And just then popped right off. You know, no big deal. It's supposed to do that.
And then the FAA grounded all the Boeing similar aircraft. So it's just like a freaky thing. And I'm really glad you made it through that flight. And we're today recording.
That's really kind.
To talk about some news that's strange.
Yeah, because you might feel unsafe in the skies, but folks, you can also be unsafe in your own home.
All right. Now, before we get too much anxiety, this story does have a nice little conclusion with some things that we can protect ourselves with. But it is going to get eerie for a little bit. And it is a tragic story. So prepare yourself. Here we go. I'm not going to read the title of this article from NBC News, WYFF, written by Janice Simon. But I'm going to...
Whoop, whoop. Big Simon fan.
Yeah. I am going to read a lot from it and then say the title at the end, the headline, so you can find it. And shout out to you, Janice, for writing it, and to you, WYFF. But here we go. And this is going to be, a lot of this is verbatim, so it's just kind of a storytelling thing. So here we go. This takes place in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And according to a report from their police department, the Spartanburg Police Department, police and medics were called just after 6 p.m., on this past Saturday, as we're recording this, so on Saturday, January 6th, to this home on Woodview Avenue there in Spartanburg, the family called and to bring them there for a welfare check because they hadn't heard from their parents since, I guess it was the previous Wednesday, January 3rd. When the officers arrived, he said all the doors are locked, but the window leading into a bedroom was unsecured, the way they put it, so like, you could open it from the outside. They removed the screen to that window, looked into the bedroom, and they saw that there was an elderly couple in there that the family had called for the welfare check. And unfortunately, that couple appeared to be deceased just from opening the window and looking in. So already tragic, like, oh my gosh, what happened? As the medics like basically went through that window, they noticed that the residence was, as they describe it, extremely hot. In the bedroom, the man was found laying on the bed unclothed, facing upwards, and the woman was on the side of the bed in a chair, kind of slouched, clothed. And they did not observe any signs of a struggle, no signs of foul play. But again, the home itself was, as they described, quote, extremely hot.
But no fire or anything, right?
No, signs of a fire. Okay. The Spartanburg Fire Department was called to check for, because what would you think maybe happened if there's no fire, but there's
carbon monoxide poisoning.
Exactly.
Or gas leak of some sort, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So no signs of foul play, as you said.
Exactly. So fire department comes in, checks for carbon monoxide poisoning. They didn't find any signs of that. So again, what the heck happened? The medics and first responders checked the temperature, the body temperature of the deceased, and they were using devices that measured up to 106 degrees. That's the height of the temperature that can be read by these devices. Both victims were above that threshold. So basically the thermometer went to 106 and then stopped. It errored out, right? That, first of all, a human body temperature of 106 is not good.
No, especially if you're older. I mean, exactly. In any situation.
It's very close to organ shutdown, in fact.
Exactly. And if the thermometer isn't reading even to the actual temperature, it is likely that they were that's probably how they died. Probably, yeah, right? But you can't say that for sure.
Makes me think of that cartoon scenario where the thermometer gets so hot that it pops. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Not to make light, but that's wild that it's beyond the ability of the device to measure.
Exactly. So listen to this. By the way, this is in South Carolina at a time when it is freezing. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily freezing temperatures, so below 32 degrees Fahrenheit outside, but we are very close to that threshold at this time in South Carolina, where this house is, right? That's the exterior temperature. The fire department who measured the interior temperature of the home got a reading of 120 degrees Fahrenheit inside the house.
So that'd be like a little under 50 Celsius?
Correct,
48
yes.
Something?
Just using Fahrenheit for the folks in the States. And again, that's just how my mind works with temperatures still, unfortunately. But 120 degrees is super hot. I don't know, guys, median temperature for my home is around 75, like 74, 75.
Ooh, that means you got pretty good insulation. Guy. That's toasty. Yeah. I mean, for it to even maintain at that level, you'd have to have pretty good insulation.
Well, that's
kind of weather, right?
I guess that's more of a, when it's hot outside temperature, maybe, or something. I don't know.
But most American households are somewhere in that range, like 68 degrees Fahrenheit to like 70-ish, depending upon exterior climate.
Exactly.
Yeah, 70 when it's cold outside is making your stuff work pretty hard to maintain that temperature.
Exactly. So for that home to be 120 degrees when it's so cold outside is a serious issue. This reading was also taken after, if you imagine, first responders getting into the house, opening that window, then going through and opening the front door and opening probably other doors and leaving them open. That is after 20 minutes of the home being open to like the cold air or the hot air, I guess, being pushed out of the home.
Oh, and just for comparison, not to be ghoulish, we can look to most people's home ovens. When you are cooking something, when you're baking something in an oven, one of the warnings you will receive is not to open the door before things are done, or to be very mindful about it, because one will lose so much heat when the seal is broken. That's what happens here. And it's still 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes. After
That's
20
insane.
Minutes.
20 minutes. I mean, and with it being quite cold outside. So, I mean, that transfer of heat would have been very quick. And for it to have only gone down to that temperature after 20 minutes is, I use the word remarkable. This is nothing but tragic. But, you know, scientifically speaking, thermodynamically speaking, this is a very, very fascinating situation.
Agreed. So let's say you're in the mind of those first responders. There's no fire in the home. The temperature is that high. What the heck's going on? What do you check?
You check the heater or the heating elements there, because I imagine this is a home that has a water heater of some sort, definitely has some sort of HVAC capability, right?
That's it. The radiators, the air furnace, the boilers, whatever it is that's heating that home, whether it's central air or some other, you know, even space heaters, you go and you check whatever is heating that home. So they go down.
And they were smelling gas, right? So the natural gas. So the assumption there is that this is a gas heated home.
Yes, they were smelling gas, but again, no carbon monoxide poisoning levels or levels that would kill a person, right?
Right.
And this is, we're talking about natural gas here that's probably coming out from some, whoever serves their natural gas needs, whoever it is. So they go down to the basement, they find the heater. And this is according to the official report. One firefighter said, quote, the heater was so hot, it looked as if the basement was currently on fire. Even though it was not, he said, I guess there was a warm glow to it of some sort that looked as though there was fire.
That haze that can happen just from heat, like in the desert, you know, where you start to see things looking a little dreamy, you know?
Yeah, I bet that's exactly what it was.
Dissipating from pavement.
Yeah, that's you know what? That makes so much sense, guys. That's exactly what they're describing. But they noticed that, it wasn't actually on fire. So they were able to get over to it close enough to turn the thing off. They measured the surface temperature of that air controller, the heater itself, and it was over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Which would be 537 something degrees Celsius.
Thank you, Ben.
Unreal.
Yes.
I mean, geez, Louise.
But just to have that amount of heat somewhere in your home where there's likely wood and, you know, whatever other materials are in your home that likely could catch fire, it's a wonder that nothing did, right? That's insane.
That part is indeed remarkable. And we could imagine that had these first responders not arrived when they did, that the house could indeed have gone up in flames. But
yes,
so some of us listening this evening are HVAC experts and may have had similar encounters. Indeed, one of the first questions for all of us non-HVAC experts is going to be something like, shouldn't mass-produced heating devices have some sort of fail-safe that allows you to, like, that ensures this won't happen?
You're right on the money there, dude. Okay, so in order to, there's more to the story, and we'll come back to it, but let's address this because this is super important. I made a call to Stewart Pro Heating and Air, which is just a local HVAC company up here where I live.
They do great work, by the way. Great work, Stuart.
They actually do. I talked to Antonio there, and he is saying it depends on the age of the system that was installed in that house. But all systems, even older ones, should function in series and should have several safety mechanisms in place to where if one of them is malfunctioning or just not working or not plugged in, the whole furnace itself would not even turn on.
Like redundancy.
It would know, even if it's an older system, it would know that it should just not turn on to continue heating the house. However, he is saying that newer systems have a lot more devices that are connected for different types of issues that can go wrong. He mentioned a couple things that I didn't fully understand, but he's saying like at least seven safety switches. There's a limit switch for temperature, a rollout trigger. I'm not sure what that is. A blower safety switch. So like if the flames actually occur and start to go out of the system, like exit the system where they're supposed to be, then it will shut itself off.
At the very least, though, I mean, I've blown my circuit breaker or tripped my circuit breaker just by plugging in like a power saw and hitting it. And then all of a sudden, click, everything. Why would this not have triggered a circuit to reset?
Well, it depends if it's electrical or not, right? And that's the thing. Like, is the amount of electricity going into it a problem? Or is it that the system itself doesn't know to shut off? Which is... which is another thing I checked out. I'll just shout this out. I went to Golden Rule Plumbing, heating, cooling, and electrical. This person named Mark Paup, P-A-U-P, wrote an article about common problems with a heating system that would cause it to continually heat a home.
Ooh, thermometer has to play a role, right?
Thermostat, so... If there's a problem with the thermostat and it's either non-functioning or not installed correctly or something happens to the wires, then potentially the system doesn't know that it's heated up to 70 degrees Fahrenheit and it thinks maybe it's 40 degrees Fahrenheit in the home. So it's going to stay on and keep warming until that thermostat reaches the level it's supposed to hit.
Mm-hmm. But there's nothing for it to tell it when to stop, basically.
Well, theoretically, again, at least according to Antonio and a lot of other writing, theoretically, the system should know to turn off because the internal temperature, if it gets above 150 degrees Fahrenheit, the system should turn off. Which in that case, it was 1,000 degrees.
Unbelievable. Know? Multiple failures, you know, in whatever happened. I'm curious to see what the ultimate takeaway was.
Well, here's another thing from the article. Another major problem could be a frayed or disconnected wire. Now, this is huge because I'm going to read directly from the article here. Whether you have a furnace, boiler, or heat pump, a dedicated thermostat wire signals the heating system to shut off. If this wire has frayed or is accidentally disconnected, your heater will not know when it's time to turn off, and you will have perpetually warm air blowing, which, in my mind at least, I'm no expert, that feels like potentially what happened because, and only because, according to the family, remember the family called in that wellness check?
Yes.
They were at the home on Wednesday, January 3rd, because the house was not getting hot enough. Both their water heater and their HVAC, their heating system, was not properly functioning. So it was really cold in the house. So family members went down into the basement, attempted to fix the issues. And I'm just going to read this from the article. It says they started, quote, fiddling with it, moving a wire, and the pilot light turned on. Once the light came back on, they left the home. And then a few days later, after not hearing from their parents, they became concerned. So, unfortunately, and terrifyingly, and tragically, it seems like maybe their attempts to help and fix this thing caused a problem that nobody saw coming, right?
Well, right. Big takeaway for me is that don't fiddle with stuff that you don't really know what you're fiddling with. And even if it seems like a waste of money, probably best to call a professional in situations like this. I don't know. I mean... If you're not confident.
Well, I think that is one of the major takeaways, right? Like with anything electrical in your home, even if you know what you're doing, you think you know what you're doing, you just got to take such caution, right? Any type of electricity. and anything that's going to deal with a pipe that contains natural gas. Good God.
Also, brilliant marketing to call it natural gas in the first place.
Yes.
Story for a different day. But Matt, like, it makes me think to the, we know from the article you shared that this couple themselves, they were not extremely mobile. They were an older couple.
Yes.
And is it then possible that they fell asleep? Like, I'm wondering if there's a hockey stick or J curve, escalation of temperature that occurred. I don't know. There are a lot of questions still.
Oh, yeah. It's a horrible thing to think about, that whole boiling frogs thing that we always bring up on this show. Like, but after it, you know, when it's uncomfortably hot, it's at least better than being freezing. And if you do go to sleep as it's warming up, you may not know. You may not wake up and your body temperature just continues heating. But we don't know. Either way, it's a tragic scenario. We don't know what happened to either victim in this scenario. There's been further reporting that you can find from Channel 7 News, a CBS channel, WSPA. There's more stuff from WYFF. These are local stations. You can find their websites. The coroner has released the names of the couple. I don't think it's necessary for us to say it online here, especially just when it comes to privacy for the family, but you can find it if you want to. Guys, I don't have much more to say other than theoretically, the systems won't do this. And there are so many companies out there that can look at a system if there's a major malfunction. Just use caution if you're in there working on it by yourself or you send a family member in. Because I don't know. It's dangerous, agreed. But it's very unlikely this scenario is ever going to happen. But there are major problems that can occur when you're dealing with natural gas and electricity. If you want to read the original article that we cited here from WYFF, you can find the headline, South Carolina couple found dead in home where heater was found to be 1,000 degrees, police say. Okay, we'll be right back with more strange news.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we've returned with more strange news. This one is a bit of an update for some stuff that we've talked about regarding the gaming industry in China. And when I say gaming industry, I'm referring to mobile games. I don't believe a lot of this regulation necessarily applies to consoles, but there are, as we know, a lot of very, very popular mobile games, and they're extremely popular in China. We talked a bit about the Chinese gaming companies Tencent and NetEase, which are two massive players in the space that focus, I believe, almost exclusively on these types of mobile games. And while certain console type games, like, you know, for the PlayStation or Xbox or whatever, do have microtransactions, ways to update parts of the game that you don't like get all of upon purchase, or maybe, you know, things like Fortnite, where the game itself is free, but you buy in-game currency that you can use to upgrade your skins or weapons or what have you. Mobile games, the bread and butter of most of these is in-app purchases. The games oftentimes are completely free, you know, to download and to play, but you end up in situations, as Ben would put it, situations that will not really allow you to advance in the game or to feel as though you're getting the most out of the game. And these are by design. They get you frustrated. They get you in a mindset where if you're really into the game and you want to, quote unquote, compete, especially if there are online, you know, components or like multiplayer competitions with some of these apps, you want to be competitive. So you're going to invest. You're going to throw down some actual bucks, not Ben bucks, in these ecosystems, which are kind of these little closed ecosystems. Oftentimes the purchases are not through some sort of third party marketplace like an app store or whatever. They are directly, you know, with that the company that makes the game. And we've talked about China oftentimes a little bit draconian methods of controlling, you know, some of the behaviors of their citizens with things like, you know, Sesame Credit, for example, the idea of having to, you know, have a certain score in order to get airline tickets, in order to travel and all of that stuff. And Ben, that is still somewhat of a, you know, down the road thing. It's not really happening or has been rolled out, the whole Sesame Credit system.
Sesame Credit in its final form, as the Pokemon fans might say. I think it's, the problem is, as we talked about, as you indicated, it started as opt-in. And I don't know if it's fully, I don't know whether it's fully rolled out to all of mainland China's population, but it is definitely on the way.
Yeah. Okay. So that, all that to say, this is a thing that that the government of China likes to do. They would claim for the greater good. They would claim for the benefit of their citizens. And a lot of these regulations extend to the gaming. I believe they've already imposed an hour and a half daily playtime limit for minors. And this is something that affects the 2.4 billion gamers in China. Now, this is actually a story that kind of kicked off or was announced in late December, but we haven't talked about it. China has announced plans to roll out some even further kind of limiting regulations, you know, that will affect the way people are able to interact with these types of games. First and foremost, in this kind of bundle of legislation, proposed new restrictions would prohibit gaming companies from giving out things like rewards for daily use. That's not monetary rewards. It would be like some sort of little bonus power up or something like that. Like
an in-game dopamine fix.
That's sure. Exactly what it is. I've played so many games that have that. If you log in daily, you get a thing. And it's just a
streak.
Yeah, it's just a tiny thing, but if you do it 7 days in a row, you're going to get an even bigger reward on day seven.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick, Noel, Matt, I have to clarify here because I think it's a confusion that happens in the West. Now the what we're talking about at the setup here is the social credit system. That's what China is calling it now.
Got it.
Originally, we in the West were calling it the Sesame credit system. However, this is very clever. Sesame Credit is a thing now that is unrelated, which is going to mess up your search terms when you're looking for the real problem, which is, again, social credit system or like something like Shehui Xinyong Tixi or something. But just so everybody knows, that's why it's hard to learn more about this.
Sure. Well, you know, and for me, I play a lot of, not a lot, but I have a handful of phone apps that I really enjoy playing. I actually am a subscriber to the Apple Arcade ecosystem or whatever, and most of the games that they feature on that are of really high quality. And they don't really, that's one thing that you get when you pay for a subscription like that is you're not bugged with in-app purchases. That's part of it. You're paying a little bit up front so you don't have to, you know, get bled over the course of, you know, your lifetime with the game. And one of the games that I play on that is called Card Jockey. It's like a solitaire meets horse racing game, which is kind of weird, a weird combo, but I really enjoy playing it. But that is actually the first time that I've noticed a daily reward thing. And it'll be some little, like a carrot, you know, for your horse that gives you a boost at the beginning of the race, or, you know, a certain type of crop, you know, for hitting your horse on the butt to make it gallop faster. But what they have done is they have, again, this hasn't been rolled out yet, but the proposed legislation would limit those things. I think it would actually prohibit those types of incentive-based rewards. So that's one. Another thing that that is being proposed is to prohibit topping off of account balances. So a lot of times within these gaming ecosystems, like, you know, with Fortnite, there's a name that for this currency. You can literally buy it.
V-Bucks?
Now, V-Bucks is Roblox. No, that's Robux.
Think that's right.
V-Bucks. You're right. I think you're absolutely right. 100%. There's Robux and Roblox, which, as we know, is very targeted at younger people. Fortnite seems a little less so. It seems a little more widely adopted, but I know a lot of young people that really enjoy it as well. But this part of the bundle of legislation or regulations would prohibit or it would limit to how frequently users can top off their account of virtual money that you have to, you know, pay actual money. And the thing that's interesting is, you know, we know how long it took for online gambling in the United States, like, you know, to be more or less legal. If I'm not mistaken, you can play online poker now in the United States for real money. But back in the day, you couldn't. And I knew a lot of people, not a lot of people, but a handful of people that were professional gamblers, and they would move around depending on what the law was in that particular country so that they could constantly play online without having to go to actual casinos. So some of these things feel very similar to the kinds of incentives that you get when you're making bets in online gambling apps or whatever.
But in the top-off scenario, you're talking about just how much you can actually, like the upper threshold of how much that wallet will hold, right?
It must be something along those lines. It may not be that, though. To me, it seems more like it's less about the upper level and about how frequently you can add money.
Oh, I see. Okay,
which that's kind of makes sense.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah, because if the amount, the maximum was whatever it was, and you deplete that because you can't control yourself, you know, in the span of a couple of days, it would probably behoove the user to not be able to add any more money for a period of time.
Especially if there's a minor involved, right? A lot of these appear to be aimed at younger users.
It does feel like that, and that is what the government is saying, that a lot of this is definitely targeting minors. For example, another part of this legislation, or actually this may have been an older one, it may already be in place, but you know how on a lot of streaming apps you can like tip people, you know, Twitch, for example, or whatever. There's, you know, all kinds of cam type apps that don't necessarily have to be what your mind immediately goes to, like in terms of like OnlyFans or, you know, more adult content. But yeah, you can tip streamers of any variety, and, you know, to have minors be able to do that could potentially be problematic.
Sure. I mean, think about for a certain demographic of our listeners this evening, the days of landline phones where people would call a 900 number, right, and get charged X amount per minute. That shares some of the same, I think, connotations you're mentioning here, Noel, the idea that there were, you know, dirty talk 900 numbers. But I have it on good authority, without over-explaining, I have it on good authority that a couple of those 900 numbers were just joke lines, and kids would call in to hear someone telling them jokes on a landline phone, And for the kids, it doesn't matter. And the parents won't know until they get the phone bill. So like with playing games on a mobile device, if you are a minor, then odds are your allowance, for lack of a better word, your financial interaction with that mobile game is going to be linked to your guardian's finances, which is a nasty bill to get when you're like, what on earth has
Kevin,
happened?
You spent $900 on room service.
Yeah, right. But now it's like $9,000 for a loot crate
on whatever it might have. Yeah, right. On widgets or what have you. That's a really good point. And you mentioned the 900 numbers too. And like, I don't know about you, but knowing that, yeah, you know, I didn't have a credit card or access to anything like that from my parents when I was a kid. Things are different now. Kids have their own Venmo accounts that are, you know, able to be replenished by their parents, but they don't have a direct access to the credit card. Or some kids get their own credit card. It just depends on, you know, the parenting at play. But like, I would have been way too terrified as a kid to snag my parents' credit card and try out one of those 900 numbers. But I definitely called the number because you get a bit of a risque little outgoing message. Yeah, yes. And that was enough for me.
See how far you can get before you have to pay. Yeah, I've done I did similar things like that as well when telephones became a technology. Like there's also this idea, I don't know, I'm tempted here, Noel, to say that this is arguably a good thing, because this does protect minors. The one thing you mentioned that may cause some of us to cast a glance askance is the idea of removing tipping for streamers, because we know that streamer platforms low key were a platform for many subversive groups domestically to communicate with the public.
Like that weird satanic murder cult that we talked
about. Not the Order of Nine Angles. I'm talking like in domestic.
Well, that was definitely one that used that ecosystem as well to recruit, you know.
I'm just saying, like, if there's some Twitch streamers, like, here's the truth about Uyghurs, or here's the truth about Tiananmen or whatever.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying it's potentially a governmental way of shutting down that kind of talk or that kind of
potentially.
Yeah,
I don't
speaking
know.
Truth to power.
They're already so closely surveilled, right? So maybe that's a bridge too far or a tank too far in the square. But the idea about protecting minors, though, that does seem like a good idea, right?
Well, all of these sound fine to me. There was another thing that involved pop-ups, kind of red flagging what's being referred to as irrational behavior. You know, like, again, we all hung out and had a good time in Vegas, right? None of those machines red flag irrational behavior.
It's a lie.
they just spur you on. You know, they're literally goading you with these half micro victories in the hopes that it will, you know, weaponize your psychology against you. And you know, we went into that situation fully aware of the things at play, and still we had a good time. I mean, it was fun. That was worth the price of admission. But yeah, we know there were definitely times where when the alcohol was flowing and such, we probably pushed it a little farther than we would have otherwise. But of course, you know, to gamble and to be in a situation like a casino, you do have to be, you know, of age, of legal age. Last thing I wanted to mention was that those companies that I named at the top of the show, Tencent and NetEase, this is not good for them or their bottom line.
Of course not.
Any of these types of regulations are bad. The already pre-existing, you know, regulations regarding game time for underage users already not great for them. And I believe when those were rolled through, and please, any listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe those haven't been pushed through yet, but I believe they have. At the very least, the number of hours that minors are allowed to spend on these games is monitored, which is in keeping with the whole monitoring of the internet at large that happens even for, you know, adults in China. But Tencent and NetEase both took massive hits to their stock price when these new regulations were just announced as being up for comment. Mm-hmm. Reuters reported that nearly $80 billion of valuation from these two companies collectively were wiped out. It says briefly. So I think there was some backlash, and obviously I don't know what the Chinese equivalent of lobbying like we have over here is, but I would imagine there's something in terms of how these giant corporations interact with the government. You know, they can't be totally at odds with one another, but maybe they are. I don't know, Ben. Is there anything there? Like, how do giant corporations in China interact with the government in the hopes that they can influence regulation? Or is that just not a thing over there in the way that it is over here?
Well, there's no campaign necessarily to be funded, right? It's a little different.
That's true.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're a very successful Chinese company, then you are inherently going to be controlled in some way by the Chinese government or the party. So the best way to succeed, therefore, in the nation of China, is to have a member of the party on your board. Which definitely happens. I got to point out too, man, the idea, folks, tell me if this is off base, the idea that their stock went down with the potential loss of billions of dollars, is that not kind of like losing billions of dollars worth of child labor if these things are really meant to prey on children, prey on minors, like those, get those kids back in the mobile game mines is what Tencent investors are saying.
It's a good question. I mean, the heads of those companies might argue that the children are their audience, you know, not necessarily, but they are feeding money into the system.
I've been asked whether there were games on my phone, et cetera. There's a reason that's a meme. And if you've seen children who are playing games, like I think we can all attest, kids will treat that like a job. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to get done with this school malarkey so I can get back to my real thing, which is insert game here.
It is funny, though, because initiatives like this do, to me, sort of signal that in some way the Chinese government cares a little bit more about the, let's just call it, intellect or the quality of mind of their citizens.
Sure.
More so than we do over here, because we don't have regulations like this. The closest thing we have is like movie ratings and like things like that. But, you know, no one over here is trying to, and ratings for games, but no one over here is trying to monitor how much time your kid spends on the computer. That's what parents are for. And if they do a good job at it, then that's great. But this, to me, and it is sort of a nanny state kind of mentality. So I get that. I'm not saying this is good. I'm just saying it seems to me like this is the Chinese government saying, we care. We want our citizenry to be smarter and don't not have their brains rotted by this stuff. But that's interesting, because a paper was actually published in August of 2023 in Nature Human Behavior that found that there was really no evidence that any of these regulations had any impact at all on people's behavior. The researchers partnered with an organization called Unity to examine the more than 7 billion hours of gaming time, screen time, among around 2.4 billion Chinese gamers. And they ran it from mid-August of 2019 to mid-January of 2020. That also included a partial measurement of the period when an hour and a half daily playtime limit was imposed, or 3 hours on holidays. So the results do indicate that this maybe has negligible returns on the said intellect of citizenry.
Well, I would just say, okay, just quickly, personally, guys, after we talked about this last, I set a limit on my son's PlayStation account that when he and I play games together, I set it for an hour and a half. So like in a 24-hour period, he can only play for an hour and a half. And I would say, just from my experience, it has had a good effect on how much he almost wants to regulate, or he knows he has to regulate his time now. And so he's totally okay with doing other activities that are not related with the television. So I do feel like this could be a great thing.
I'm with you. I just wonder, you know, how, you know, we're different. We're a different country. There's different behaviors. I think there might be slightly higher instances of like mega obsessive gaming. And I think maybe the result of the study was measuring was really just showing that there were ways around it or something. You know what I mean? That like, that not necessarily that it wasn't helping because people were following it. It was not helping because people were finding loopholes or something. I think, 'cause I'm with you, and with my kid, they have come to a place where they want to self-regulate because they know it makes them enjoy life better. And they actually are mature enough to realize that obsessive internet use and obsessive gaming is actually a negative, and it can make you just not have a great quality of life and can lead to anxiety and, you know, social withdrawal and things like that. So I think you're right on the money, because what you've done with your son has gotten him to a place where he sees the value in limiting himself, right?
Theoretically.
Yeah, I would like young, to think so. Yeah, but I'd like to think so. Anyway, that's really it. Something to keep an eye on for sure. Comment period on this bundle of regulation is not until January the 22nd. As we record this, we're sitting on January the 10th. So I know there's already been massive backlash, and a lot of the you know, companies, of course, are responsible for that. But anyway, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with another piece of strange news.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we have returned. Warning, folks, there's deep water ahead. This may not be appropriate for all audiences. What I'd like to do to begin the final act of our strange news segment is to give praise and credit where it is due. Super important, mission critical. NBC News has a continuing investigation called Lost Rights, R-I-T-E-S. And through this investigation, part four of this investigation, learned an incredibly disturbing story. Recently, 250 bodies were found buried in a pauper's field in Hinds County, Mississippi. They are along a dirt road on the grounds of what is called a jail work farm. Shout out to our journalist here, John Shoup. You can read this is part four of Lost Rights, but I highly recommend reading the whole thing in full. It's disturbing. It is stuff they don't want you to know. If you go down this dirt road, what you will see is when they say a graveyard, what you're actually going to see is just a bunch of metal rods, no names, just numbers stamped on the rods. And every few months, for the better part of a decade, inmates on the grounds have been digging new graves, adding new bodies to the already hundreds of people there. And the problem is that the families of these people who passed away from any number of means, the families were never alerted. These are not prisoners being buried. These are not people incarcerated in any way. These are people who fell through the cracks of America's increasingly fragmented social system. And so imagine then, if you will, that you have put in a missing persons report for a member of your family, a child, a sibling, a parent, a loved one, and you have not heard about this for years. And then you learn that also for years, they have been buried anonymously in Hinds County, Mississippi. That's what's happening. That's reminding me of our pal Jason Flom's work over at Lava for Good. NBC News found several cases in which these folks were dead and buried in this field, even though the family had put the word out to every possible government agency saying, hey, we're trying to find out what happened to this, to our Jane or John Doe. And it turns out Mississippi just didn't check. And every time these families are contacted, they're saying, look, if we had known what had happened, we would have claimed the remains. We would have given our loved ones a proper funeral. But now, how can we trust the government, right? We did everything correctly. Why did we have such an egregious misstep of justice? And before we continue with that lay of the grisly, ghoulish land here, I have to ask, did you guys hear about this story? Like, I think it really started coming to the forefront in early January.
I had not, but even just the part where you're describing the rods with numbers stamped on them, that's some dystopian sounding stuff right there, let alone the part that the story's reporting on, the ones that fell through the cracks.
I didn't know the personal stories that you're mentioning here in this series, Ben. Who did you say that writer was?
The writer for this one is John Shoup.
Yeah, I just found, like, I went through some of the links you shared and then found that first story on it. And just to read an entire article on one person who lost their son this way, it's just devastating. I didn't know the details, man. This is horrifying.
I'm glad you're pointing out that one story. This is a human thing. We have to remember these are actual human beings, not just numbers stamped on metal rods. Apparently, people have been trying to get records from the county coroner for different burials within the county, but those records don't exist, or they were lost prior to 2016, which is super recent and should really bother you, even if you don't live in Mississippi. The number of families that are going to find their loved ones' remains due to this investigation will only increase. Again, it's 215 bodies, not all of which have been identified. And it brought me back to another thing that we haven't talked about too often here, but I know we've touched on it in previous episodes, the idea of the pauper's grave, right? So how would we describe the pauper's graveyard for anyone not in the U.S. or otherwise unfamiliar?
Well, I'll just tell you what I'm looking at in this series of articles. I see a field that you would see in really any American state that has, I don't know, what would you say, pine trees, right? And then openings.
Sure. Yeah, rural / suburban-esque.
Yeah, they sometimes call a potter's field. Like, yes. I believe that's another term associated with these paupers.
burial sites.
In this case, I think at least the one in the story I'm looking at right now is attached to what they call a penal colony. Right. So
a farm.
Exactly. A prison system that is a farm also. And it looks to be the same materials that they would use for a street sign, like a piece of metal. That's like just
rebar. Not quite. I know what you mean with the rivets, the little holes in
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just hammered into the ground with what looks to be a piece of cardboard attached to it and like painted, like just
handwritten
numbers painted on that piece of cardboard.
Mm-hmm. And the issues here are myriad indeed. You know, the idea that one could not find records from before 2016, again, I just keep going back to how disturbing that is and how quickly history can be erased. The NBC News investigation says, look, we have a list of missing people. And we have in that list, we have some confirmed identities. We have some missing or unconfirmed identities. We're having problems like investigating in good faith with the local government. We know that we have had to remove some people from this list. One person they shout out is Dexter Wade. Dexter Wade is removed from this pauper's field and given a proper funeral. And it's due to the reporting of NBC News, which again goes back to the fact that journalism is important.
Okay, let's just talk about Dexter for a moment. He is the subject of that first story. Right. And just quickly, he left his house on March 5th. An hour after he left his house on foot, he gets hit by a police vehicle.
Yeah, he's 37 years old.
Yeah, but he gets hit by a police officer and is killed on a highway. So, like, imagine a person crossing a highway and gets struck by a police vehicle. First of all, obviously, don't cross the highway on foot. Just not a smart thing to do. But if you get hit by a police vehicle, you'd think somebody would get notified immediately. But that is mm-hmm. not what happened.
No, it is not. Let's go to another article by John Shoup. This one from November 13th of 2023. He talks about the arrangements that the Wade family had to go through to find her son. And first off, yes, we are very well aware, folks, that there is truth to the stereotype about corruption in small towns. By the way, send us your stories of small town corruption, conspiracydieheartradio.com. To your point, Matt, one thing that is just stunning in the worst way is the idea that you could be hit by a police car. No one knows except the guy who hits you or the officer who hits you and the people who agree to cover it up, literally in this case, to cover up the body. This article is titled Dexter Wade's Family Suffers a Final Indignity as He's Exhumed Without Ceremony. Dexter's mother, Betterson Wade, arrives at the penal farm, at the work farm. And when she gets there, after finally learning what happened to her child, she also learns that her son's remains have been dug up or exhumed, put in a body bag, and then tossed in the back of a Chevy Suburban. Because a public works crew had turned up earlier that morning and removed the remains before anyone else arrived. To her, it's yet another iteration of her being continually cut out of the process.
Dude, just the fact that he got struck and killed on March 5th, he got identified by the police department, by the medical examiner on March 9th. Mm-hmm. That information was sent to the police department. Nobody was notified. Then on March 14th, 9 days after her son is killed, the mother calls the police to report him missing. And she still like that. That is so horrifying.
Yeah. And what the Hinds County coroner, by the way, again, this microcosmic aspect of this is important. Because this is a similar story to the other 215 people that are gone, right? This story is one example of what has happened to hundreds of people. And we can only then rightly assume, by the way, that this has occurred or something similar has occurred in numerous small towns throughout the United States. Look, when, like you're saying, when the Wade family learns what happens to their son, they interact with the Hinds County Coroner's Office, who say, look, your son's body was unclaimed for months. We didn't know about it. And so since he was unclaimed, we just buried him where we put any other body that falls through the cracks, which again is macabre and, in my opinion, unclean.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, that is sort of standard procedure and is considered, quote unquote, like above board to do, like, you know, you try to reach out to next of kin, the prison organization or officials or whatever. And if you don't hear anything back, then there still is this sort of accepted understanding that they will be buried in not a mass grave. That's something else. But in this pauper's grave situation, but this particular case just involves more egregious examples of them not even trying to reach out.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. So the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, Chakwe Antar Lumumba, has publicly stated, look, there's no malicious intent here. This is a series of incredibly tragic miscommunications. And the problem is that doesn't bring back the Dexter Wades, right? That doesn't bring back the people who were affected by this. We also want to shout out another piece, this one by John Shoup with Mike Hixenbaugh, about Jonathan David Hankins, who left home in May of 2022. Authorities found him dead a few days later, also did not contact his mother. She had to search for him for months, and it was not until NBC did this investigation that she discovered where he was buried. This feels, this feels like it's bigger than Hinds County. I'm wondering how many more cases of this are out there. Have you guys ever been to a pauper's field? Have you seen a potter's yard or anything like that?
I've not.
No.
They're more out there than I think any of us would like to contemplate. And it's an incredibly frightening thing, but it's like, it also, at least here, it has somewhat of a, I don't even want to call it a silver lining, of closure, because thank you entirely to the journalist who figured this out. If they had not been digging in, I don't know whether this would have triggered some, I don't know what would have happened. I don't know. And so we owe Shoup a huge thank you. I mean, do you guys think the authorities would have at some point said, hey, we gotta make things right in our pauper's grave?
It kind of feels like the kind of thing where they would be more likely to just leave well enough alone because of the nature of, you know, poverty and the fact that it would be few and far between the cases where someone would come looking for these folks. You know, it's awful. I'm just saying that would likely in my mind be the thinking there.
Yeah. The problem is multipolar, right? We're talking about when the system fails, and it doesn't necessarily mean there is conspiracy afoot, but it does mean that people and institutions may well commit conspiracies as an attempt to cover up their previous actions. That's how these things happen. That's how this stuff occurs. And that's why this is a call out to all of our fellow conspiracy realists. We want to hear your stories of small town corruption. Please, please, please do write to us. This stuff is important. And the best we can say is that we're holding the survivors of these folks in our thoughts. The wheels of justice grind exceedingly slow, but exceedingly fine. And there is closure at the end, which I do think, I mean, it's something. We didn't want to end on a super downer note, so here are stories we didn't get to, just figured they could get a quick mention. Violence is rocking Ecuador. TV station got overrun. I think we all saw that.
Everybody got arrested.
Everybody got arrested. Even the police. I'm kidding. Some Ecuadorian police should be arrested, though. That's pretty clear at this point. There was, did you guys see this one? The synagogue brawl?
Yeah, a secret tunnel. What the heck is that?
I don't know about that.
Yeah. There was a tunnel dug in a New York City synagogue that led to a brawl between police and members of the community who go to that synagogue. The reason I'm bringing this up is because a lot of crazy anti-Semitic misinformation went out about this, because this is a Hasidic Jewish community, right? And please be cautious with the stuff you read about that, because our old friends at Davos looked at all the short-term threats of this, our current world, and they said, you know, the number one threat is AI-driven misinformation. That's what's happening.
I disagree, Davos. You know what the number one threat is, guys?
What's that?
It was huge 8-foot shadow beings that are teleporting all around a mall in Miami. Yeah. What is going on?
We're
going
to talk about that in the next episode.
Classic Miami.
No, seriously, that's in listener mail coming up. Yeah. Somebody wrote in about that. I can't wait to hear more.
God.
No, and just, you know, politics aside, Rudy Giuliani is broke and is likely going to be spending the rest of his life fighting off people trying to get their money from him. He apparently lost out in a defamation suit filed by two of the poll workers here in Atlanta, actually, who he outwardly defamed and led to them receiving death threats. And they are going to get quite a lot of money from him. And he is apparently on the verge of bankruptcy, but you can't file bankruptcy to get out of paying out damages for these types of cases.
Oh, I thought you were going to say student loans.
Yeah, well, there's that. He's still paying those off too. But again, not a political statement. Just I think however you fall on the divide there, you can probably agree that this dude was not the best.
And shout out to every fellow conspiracy realist right now who is it was a hydro homie. I've got your back. Please remember, studies recently shown that microplastics are in literally every instance of bottled water. Sip, sip, dupe, indeed. Shout out to the nostalgia we're already experiencing about 2023. It's so hot right now. As a matter of fact, it is the hottest year on record since humans started measuring temperatures.
I'm getting so hot, I'm going to take my clothes off.
Hey, sorry. Whip your shirt all around. What is the, I don't know the song.
You don't know. Doesn't matter.
Nay Nay?
That's a different one.
Well, shout out to Nelly.
Whip
shout
my
out to
hair
US.
Back and forth and whipping Nay Nay.
Shout out to Nelly. Shout out to the U.S. president. Both fans of Air Force One. That's strange news, folks. We can't wait to hear. Again, I'm very serious about this. Small town corruption. It happens so often. Sending our thoughts to the survivors of the people buried in Hinds County, Mississippi. We cannot wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
We do. We try and hopefully succeed. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, X, FKA Twitter, and YouTube. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, let's do an experiment. If you are listening to this and you have Instagram, go to our feed, Conspiracy Stuff Show, and put a comment on the Mandela Effect reel that we put out
recently.
We're
really proud of that one, guys. It's so cool. Big shout out to Station 16 and the folks over there and West and the team for putting that one together. It's such a cool edit. And
I'm just so glad. I'm so glad you guys liked it. I know it was a really weird pitch.
Thank you for pitching it, Ben. It was a great idea. I think we pulled it off. Just do check it out. We want to see how many people are actually listening and hanging out on Instagram. All right.
And we promise not to replace that video with another video and gaslight you.
Why would you say that, Ben? We're not going to do that. Oh, hey, if you want to call us, we have a number. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your message on the air in one of our listener mail episodes. If you want to send us more things, why not instead send us a good old fashioned email? We are
The folks who read every single email we get, send us the pictures, send us the links, take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We'll do the rest. Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.